43. That's officially confirmed. Luda scale. Better have my donuts here with Bad News Ramen to the left of me. Discussing the wrestling business again and coming off WrestleMania weekend. It was a fun weekend. We got to come over a couple times. We watched the NXT show on Friday. We watched WrestleMania. I saw Raw. I'm assuming you watched Raw. It is the Monday Raw after Mania. And I don't know. There's a lot of angles or a lot of different directions we can go. And I'm gonna let you bring up whatever topics you want to.
No, that's a cop out.
But after I want to throw the first one out now, and then I'll let you go.
What if I don't want to go?
You're gonna go. So
I don't have to go. Get the hell out of my house.
You're gonna go.
You gotta go. You got to go right now.
Let me say it real slow. Gotta go. So I felt like that crowd at Monday Night Raw was like the
biggest. You're gonna start off with Raw after WrestleMania?
No, I told you I want to get one thing off my chest. Okay. And then I thought that crowd was the biggest mark for itself crowd I've ever seen. And they kind of tried to hijack the show in certain spots, where I felt like like a couple years ago that the night after crowd at Brooklyn was a great crowd, and it wasn't like they were just cheering for the stuff they wanted to cheer for, right? They weren't like trying to get over it. Just kind of happened organically, as we like to say. But I think progressively, some of these crowds, and this one was just for me, especially the way they're acting with that during the Divas Championship presentation. It was just embarrassing, man. So these crowds kind of need to get over themselves in certain cases, and I thought that crowd was particularly bad. Whatever else you want to go with that or not, or you want to go to Mania or NXT, let's go.
All right.
Unless you want to respond to that, which it doesn't look like you do.
Well, I thought out of everything that happened this weekend, you started talking about the crowd. No, I understand, dude.
I thought it stood out as really bad. Yeah. But I didn't want to I don't want to be like them and try to hijack this podcast. Well, I just want to, because I know we got a lot of stuff we're going to get into, and I didn't want to.
I thought you were going to chant "We Are Awesome" or something,
I just wanted to address that. I thought that was particularly bad, especially coming off a really good weekend of wrestling. So, that being what it is, the floor is yours.
I still don't want the floor. I mean, you got to carry it. Well, let's go with the. Let's go with the biggest kind of thing that is kind of what we've been talking about the past couple of weeks on our podcast. It was a good WrestleMania. Ain't nothing to, nothing really bad, but nothing really spectacular. It's kind of I was talking a lot about Triple H's arrogance for this main event, and we thought that, a swerve needed to happen, this, that, and this, and I think that there was a lot of missed opportunities with that WrestleMania. I was satisfied with the show, but this is like your biggest show that you hang your hat on, and I think being satisfied isn't enough. I thought the main event with Triple H and Roman Reigns was lackluster at best. Mm-hmm. It was like a straight finish. It's just listening to, it's funny you bring up the fans, but just kind of listen to the general reaction over the past 2-3 months with Roman Reigns. Something needed to be done, and it wasn't. And it was getting to the point where me and you were sitting there watching the main event, and we knew it was getting close to taking it home. And you just started throwing out all these scenarios that this guy was going to come back, Seth Rollins is going to come back. You're just throwing stuff out there to see if it stuck on the wall, and it didn't. So, it's... For as bad as I came into thinking WrestleMania would be, it was an okay match. I mean, but you needed something different, right? Like I just don't think that. Well, I do think that Roman Reigns has no momentum going into that match, and Triple H is Triple H, and with all the stupid ass buildup that they tried doing before, where they break his nose and there's blood all over the place. Yeah, it fell short, dude. That's where I'm left at. I thought if I'm to look at the overall show, I thought it was paced pretty well. The Ambrose and Brock Lesnar match was a throwaway match. It really wasn't any drama behind it. the Undertaker Shane McMahon match, it's a punch and lock fest. But I Shane McMahon jumping off the steel cage, I mean, of course that's great, right? But I've seen Shane do similar things like that before. I really liked it. I think the best thing I liked about that match was just the interaction at the very end when Shane's telling Undertaker to come on and give it to him some more. And then Undertaker kind of pats him on the head saying, like, good job. So, I mean, there's just a small things like that. But with a match of that magnitude, that shouldn't be the biggest thing that I take away from that match. I thought the AJ Styles-Chris Jericho match was a good match. But that's just what it was. It was good. I was happy that Chris Jericho won. It was a well played match. The ladder match with the Intercontinental Championship was okay. You know, it was good. I mean, I'm not trying to find things wrong. The match that I thought that stole the show was the Divas Triple Threat match. I thought that was the match of the night, and that was one of the better Triple Threat matches I've seen. And I really thought that, and I'm going to pose this to you, Sasha Banks and the Last Kicker did a really good job. But I really think Charlotte really shined just as a heel. You know, she played the heel role perfectly. She did a lot of stuff, a lot of oohs and ahs. That moonsault was one of the best moonsaults I've seen in a long time. Mm-hmm. Her athleticism really showed through. I'm a big Sasha Banks fan, and then you kind of go like on Twitter like, oh, Sasha should have won that match. I think Charlotte should have won that match, and I thought she did a great job. And I don't think you have – I mean – the match was just intense, right? Like just spot after spot after spot. That you didn't have too much of the person outside of the ring just kind of hanging out, taking a nap while there's two people going on. They interact a lot. They botched something in the beginning, but they were so fluid and it was such a fast paced match that the botch I don't think really mattered. Mm-hmm. Sasha botched a landing on a turnbuckle, but then they just snapped right back into it, right? So you knew it was a botch, but it was like kind of like a nonchalant thing where they got right straight back into it. Mm-hmm. And I thought Charlotte really played that heel role to a T, and that was probably my favorite match that I've seen. That was my favorite match at WrestleMania, and it was one of the better matches. I mean, maybe it gets, I don't know if it gets match of the year, but I mean, I think, you know, there's some contention to it.
Yeah, no, it was a really good match. And I kind of think along the lines of you, so what I'll say with like people saying Sasha should have won it. I mean, I think for the overall story, I kind of think, it's time for Sasha Banks to be the champion, and I think, because as long as she's not the champion, I think it's, as good as Charlotte's doing right now, they're kind of, like, stifling Sasha Banks so Charlotte, like, is clearing ahead, like, the number one. But that being said, I mean, I thought she deserved to win the match. Like, she had the best match of all those girls, all those women in that match, and, like you said, the moonsault was great. She did a good job all the way through the match. So I felt like she should win the match based on that individual match. But I think I can see the argument that as far as the storyline and development of these people, like it was probably time that Sasha should be the champion. But I got no problem.
I disagree with that. I think with the work that Charlotte's done over the past 2 months leading up to WrestleMania, I think she's really shined. And I remember watching that Triple Threat match. I'm kind of going like, well, aren't I? I'm a big Sasha Banks fan. Like, how come this isn't bothering me? So, I think Charlotte's getting to that point where, we kind of said she was really kind of vanilla and raw when she first came in to the on the main roster, but her promos have gotten really her promos are really good, and her work in the ring, I don't think that was ever questioned, but. I mean, she's doing everything as a champion, and
well, I think her ring work's gotten better as this heel persona has developed. So I think she is better in the ring now than she was, and she was already really good in the ring. But yeah, the personality and the charisma is coming through. She did, as I was talking about, like with that crowd, you know, she didn't really know, she didn't react too well to that, and I don't know that any of them would have.
I thought she did a commendable job reacting to the crowd on Monday.
She did as much as she could, but it wasn't. It was looking bad and it was looking painful, and I'm not blaming her. I'm not trying to say it's her fault, and I'm not trying to say any of the other divas out there could have. But you know, it's fine that like the crowd likes Bayley. I don't have a problem with that. But to me, she's good, but she's clearly behind those three. and for them to just want to mark out for themselves and start, like, interrupting, you know, what's supposed to be a big deal. You know, they make this big deal about, oh, you know, these are women and they shouldn't be called divas and it's objectifying and, you know, it's long overdue. And I agree with all that. That's fine, right? And then they go and do that. And on top of it, it's coming off the heels of a great match. And they can't just, like, appreciate that. And they got to start trying to hijack the show just to call up for Bayley, who, while she's really good, and she was, I thought, really good on NXT. Like, I enjoyed that match more.
She has a lot to learn, though.
But yeah, yeah, but I thought that was about the best match that I've seen her in, right? You know, fine. But you don't need to, like, kind of ruin what is a moment that you claim that you've been looking for quite a while. And on the heels of that, you're getting great matches with it.
So let's get back to WrestleMania and let's kind of get your take before you really talk about what you want to talk about with the crowd. Mm-hmm. What was your kind of impression of
everything? Yeah, I mean, I felt like on the overall the card was pretty good. Like, I thought, like, you're talking about pacing of the show, like those the earlier matches, the undercard kind of stuff.
It went fast this year.
And I was surprised. Like, people were saying it was 4 hours, and the people that were there were kind of getting tired by the end. I never noticed at all. Like, I never felt like the thing was dragging. And I thought the undercard was as good as it needed to be. I thought that the Shane and Undertaker match was as good as it could have been, like, given what it is. I think had they had, like, a really good main event, and that Lesnar-Ambrose match was something that was more interesting, then I thought, like, that Undertaker and Shane match would have slid in perfectly. I think it was what the show needed at the time. But, like, then, yeah, that the main event just falls off, and then the other kind of co-main, the Lesnar-Ambrose match, yeah, you said it was a throwaway. Yeah, it was a nothing match. There's just no drama, no nothing, just, like, there was no excitement at the finish. It's just, oh, here it is. He got him on the chairs, and then, you know, is he going to kick out? Maybe. Once he didn't, it's just, okay, that was it. All right, fine. So, yeah, I think on the overall, it's a good card, but they're lacking something at the top. And I think in some ways, like, it kind of calls into question, like, you know, there's been, like, long been this stigma of Triple H that, like, he's always been the other guy, right? It's like, he's in DX, they have this great run, but Shawn Michaels is kind of the guy, and he's along for the ride. Or, like, the matches he's had with Stone Cold, with Mankind, with The Rock. Like, he was always, like, good being that other guy right there. And you know, some would say, like, that's a pretty common criticism he gets. A lot of people will say that's unfair. You know, I admit, you know, I'm biased. I'm not really a mark for Triple H. But if you're going to say, like, this is the guy you want to dust off and put him into this match with Roman Reigns, like that's really, you know, his opportunity to, like, you're supposed to be taking a guy that can give a rub to Roman Reigns. And I thought it really kind of, like, highlighted all these past criticisms that Triple H, like, he had to carry that match, and he had to kind of show the way for Roman Reigns, and he didn't do anything. It was like a real, just a Triple H match.
Well, he got a free pass this year, and I'm talking about Triple H, because the one criticism of past WrestleManias is that they dust off these old characters, you know, and they put them in the main events. And at the same time, it's like, you know, we have always said that Triple H will try to put himself in a position where he can get heat from someone else. And he did it with Brock Lesnar when he came back. They wanted to do it with CM Punk and have him have a match with CM Punk. He pretty much has done what he always does, is that, you know, he dusted himself off to get one last run and one last hurrah, which he does every single year. And we kind of forgot about that. The main part is that this guy hasn't done anything all year, and then right before WrestleMania, he wins the title. And you want to talk about bringing in old guys that don't deserve to be there, let alone the main event. And I'm looking, and especially with the Raw that just happened after it, they got a lot of guys. I mean, there's a lot of guys that you could push in, a lot of entertaining guys, and there's just a great amount of characters that you haven't seen before. But then what do we have for the main event? We have Triple H versus Roman Reigns. You know, Roman Reigns right now isn't a big draw. Triple H is following the formula that the great smart IWC that knows everything. Well, I think they failed to realize is that, hey, not only are they dusting off an old character in Triple H, but at the same time, he's trying to get glory by being in a main event. Why the hell is Triple H in a main event in this day and age when you have all these other guys that you could have built up, and instead you're going back to this old standby, and he's supposed to sway the minds of the millions of people that hate Roman Reigns, and he's supposed to be the catalyst to make Roman Reigns a fan favorite? It's a joke. It's a mockery of what we as wrestling fans have come to expect or even want. And Triple H exemplifies that, and he got a free ride this year.
And, you know, it's an opportunity, right? You know,
for him.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, he could come out and really, you know, build like Roman Reigns right there. And like the build to WrestleMania.
But how are you going to build? He tried, but how are you going to build him?
I'm saying, yeah. if he's,
I'm not disagreeing. I'm not going to disagree with what you say.
If he's the guy that he claims he is, and the 14-time world champion, and you know the guy that was like the guy during the Attitude Era, he should be able to figure out a way to make that happen. And he failed at that. He didn't. Like he just didn't do the job.
And the way he tried to do it was like with the oldest way in the book, right? Bloody up the baby face, put the baby face in the hospital. It's like, this isn't 1978, dude, you know?
It's like, yeah, if you can't do it, let some of these other guys. And the thing is, like, they've got all the guys in there. I mean, I think we kind of figured it out like a long time ago. I mean, the guy that would have been perfect for that spot would have been Chris Jericho. And even like kind of going out of WrestleMania, Jericho's in that mix. I mean, I think it could be an interesting time going forward, changing up opponents for Roman Reigns, and I like what they did.
Well, I wouldn't have liked Chris Jericho either. I mean, I think Chris Jericho would have been the lesser of two evils, but I think they're...
It's something that we haven't seen, and...
I have kind of seen it, though. I mean, I've seen it with, like, CM Punk, and, you know...
I don't see how that's the same, but I'd say it's something that we haven't seen. And it's a guy
who, what is it that we haven't seen?
You haven't seen Chris Jericho get a good legitimate run near the
top. You're talking about with the top.
With the title.
Where he gets the title. Okay. Yeah,
with the title for like 5 years at least, right? And then let him, like, with all the talk that he can do, like he was cutting some great promos in this whole AJ thing. And he really built that. Like look at that as a juxtaposition, okay? And it's like, you got a guy in AJ Styles who's a great worker, everyone knows, but he's very limited in what he can do in terms of the mic. Chris Jericho completely carried that, completely carried all the drama and intrigue to lead into that. And some of his stuff, like, again, like the chanting and stuff, you know, that was weak, but the strength of his...
Did you think that would transfer over? I mean, do you think that transfers over if it was a card with Roman Reigns versus Chris Jericho as a champion? I mean, you think it'd be the same?
No, I think it'd be better. I think it'd be a lot better. I think he could have gotten the things that Triple H was trying to do to get Roman Reigns over and really just couldn't resonate with the crowd. Jericho would get there. I think Jericho would get there, and he's a much better in-ring performer anyway.
So, well, I think there could have been better opponents that Triple H or even Roman Reigns could have done. I think, you know, Sheamus I think could have been. I'm saying, but you have a guy like Bray Wyatt, right? Where Roman Reigns has to go through all these obstacles to finally win the title, and he has to overcome all these odds. And the reason why I said Sheamus is because that's what they did in the beginning when Roman Reigns got over as a champion for like the 2 days that he had. So,
but you couldn't build for like 2 months on Sheamus and Roman Reigns promos.
Yeah, it'd probably have to. And I don't even know if you could do it with Bray, just because Bray is so out there with his promos.
Right, possibly Bray, but he hasn't been put in a position. But it's the same. Like, Jericho's the kind of guy. Like, that's why, I mean, whenever Jericho comes back, they're trying to put him with guys that they're trying to get ready for that main event. And this would have been a perfect chance for, like, a lot. I think there's a lot more stuff that Roman Reigns could have learned off working with Chris Jericho is kind of what I'm getting at. Are there other guys? Sure there are. Definitely other guys, you know, and, you know, having Seth Rollins get hurt, you know, that really, nothing they can do about something like that. Okay, but with the hand that they're dealt...
They could have done something with that, right? I mean, if they would have...
Right, but, yeah. I mean, in-ring. But with the hand that they're dealt, I mean, you had opportunities to do something new and creative with guys that can get the job done, and they just go, like, default back to Triple H, and it goes nowhere.
I think Seth Rollins versus Roman Reigns for the main event, I think that's something I could have bought into, especially knowing the worker that Seth Rollins is.
They have good chemistry. I mean, it's already established they got good chemistry. Yeah, and that would work. And especially after seeing Seth, you know, fight Lesnar the way that he did those couple of matches. I mean, you don't go in thinking, like, that Seth is really going to be completely physically outmatched against a much bigger, stronger opponent than Roman Reigns, because he knows how to work that style. So, but, I mean, that, again, there's nothing they can do about something like that. But given the cards that they had in their hand, like, they went careful.
Exactly. They played it safe. And that's what all these pay-per-views are, for the most part, is they play it safe. And it seems when there is a pay-per-view or a WWE network exclusive type match for the main roster, you have better shows. I mean, and I point out back to the Beast, you know, Beast from the East or whatever, you know, whatever that thing was over there. But, you know, that Japan show was a good card. I mean, because they had the freedom to do what they want to do. And to tell you the truth, they had to give a card like that because the Japanese fans, I think, are a whole lot smarter than kind of what we have in the U.S., right? Like, they couldn't come with the same old that they do in the United States. And that's the biggest problem I had with WrestleMania. I don't have a problem with it in terms of execution, but I have a big problem with it in terms of theory, right? Like, this is your landmark event. This is your Super Bowl. And I think I even said this was like, you know, WrestleMania has become like the Super Bowl in the late 80s, early 90s, where the season was really great, but the last game was kind of, you know, the main game, which would be kind of your main event, was already a foregone conclusion, and there wasn't a lot of drama. And I think if you want to parallel with NFL, what the NFL has been able to do is that the playoffs and the Super Bowl have actually become like the best part of the season, where before it was like the main season was the best part. Playoffs were kind of a foregone conclusion, but there's so much competition, and it all plays out. And then when you actually have like really good Super Bowls and fun Super Bowls to watch, that's kind of the sad thing with WWE right now is like I was sitting there going like, this is your landmark show. This is when you have the most media attention, and I think they have reached a certain point where they are where they want to be in terms of mass media with a fingerprint, you know, on the mass media. And it's a case where when Brock was done, I was going, well, there's no way Brock Lesnar's going to lose because he's ESPN's, you know, grand baby child, right? Like they're not going to have Brock Lesnar lose because Brock Lesnar's supposed to win. So to me, Brock Lesnar can wrestle for the next 10 years and never lose. He'll be kind of like another version of The Undertaker. But do something, right? I mean, do something different. And I think the reason why they don't do it is because, and I had to leave you this thought because I have to put the clothes in the dryer, but they don't take risks because the mass media market can't understand it. They can't have intricate storylines or a big payoff because the markets that they're trying to reach for WrestleMania will not understand it and won't understand the significance of it.
I mean, that could be the case with Brock Lesnar. I could see that. He's like your media go-to guy, and I think to a large degree, John Cena is also kind of like that. Part of why they always feel like they got to force him down people and make him win is because, you know, he's going to go and do the Today Show, and he's going to do all the talk show late night circuit and talk to all those people too. But what I will disagree with is I thought that part of what made the undercard really appealing was it was very unpredictable. And I think that's been one of the problems in a lot of recent years was with WrestleMania's is up and down the card. It's been really predictable. And, you know, you go out and you have a ladder match to open the show, which was a pretty good match. And Zack Ryder comes out and wins. I thought there was no way that Zack Ryder would win that title, and he came out. You know, you're kind of do the thing where you're saying, okay, well, percentage wise, I'm thinking Kevin Owens has like, you know, a pretty large, like a 40% chance to win, and then we're talking about like Sami Zayn probably has like 20% chance to win. You kind of keep going down the line. Like Zach, for me, was an afterthought. I'm thinking, no way. And he wins the match, and it's good. And he has his WrestleMania moment. I thought that was actually a really good moment on the show as well, when he got the title and, you know, his dad was able to come out and stuff like that. And then obviously what happened on Raw, you know, he dropped the title right away, which, you know, kind of sucked. But at least he got his WrestleMania moment. But I think that, like, that was an unpredictable finish that was good. To a certain degree, Chris Jericho and AJ Styles match was an unpredictable finish. I mean, I kind of had a feeling that it was time for Jericho to win, but to actually have them go through with it, you know, I think that was surprising. The New Day losing, I think that was a little bit of a surprise. I mean, you could kind of see it coming once it became that the title was no longer on the line. But I mean, I did feel the undercard, you know, it was not as predictable as it's been in the past. Now then, you go to those main matches, and even to a certain degree, the Divas match. You know, I was kind of expecting Sasha Banks was going to win, and you know, she lost. That didn't bother me. Didn't bother me at all. In fact, actually, they did it really well by having Ric Flair hold her out, so it's like she didn't lose. You know, and so it kind of keeps the intrigue going forward.
You never beat me yet.
But then, yeah, you get to those main matches, and there was no drama, like you said, in the Brock Lesnar match. I think there was some drama in terms of who was going to win with the Shane and Undertaker matches, because the way they positioned the stipulations.
But once it wasn't the main event, right? Like you knew nothing was going to happen,
right?
And I think that was kind of to me that kind of signified going like, because you know, coming into WrestleMania, I was like, man, a lot of things can happen. I wonder if they're actually going to like do a swerve or totally blow you away. The second that they came out and you realized that they weren't going to be the main event, because there's even talk like this might be the main event, this, that, and this. And the whole question is like, well, why are you questioning what's going to be the main event? Because both matches were kind of lackluster anyways. But to me, the second that match came out, I was like, all right, it's going to be more of the same. Nothing's going to happen.
Right.
And that's a problem unto itself.
Yeah, and so like you know, I will definitely agree with you in those main event matches. But I thought part of what kept that undercard intriguing was there was a lot of outcomes that were not like very obvious type finishes, and I didn't even just like John Cena says, whether the guy that I wanted to win the match won or whether they lost, I was fine with all the finishes because it was drama and it was intriguing. And there was false finishes and guys that I didn't think necessarily
because
only won.
They finally have workers, right? They finally have guys that know how to work. I mean, you look at that Intercontinental match, and they're all full of workers. All full of good workers. I mean, Sin Cara The Miz is probably your worst worker, but he was intriguing in that match, right? I mean, I had no problem with any of those guys in the match, and the main thing with that undercard is that you finally have a case now where you have a bunch of workers that can put on a good show. And right now, it's a missed opportunity because I want to see those workers in the main event and see how they do.
Right.
And granted, you have two guys that kind of came from that spot, and I think it's really just one guy. I mean, I think Dean Ambrose is like the worker, the one of the few workers that have come out and is in the main event picture and can actually work. But I think he's stifled in a lot of ways because now he's in the main event, right?
Yeah,
or in a main event type match.
But, well, it is just the type of match that it was. And his opponent, right? You know, there's not much drama between him going against Brock. But I will say, like, kind of as it played itself out to Raw, and when just trying to decide who's going to be the first number one contender for Roman, I mean, it's the Fatal 4-Way was Jericho and Zayn and AJ Styles and Kevin Owens. And that's who we want to see make it up to the main event. Okay, so I don't know if it really means anything or if it's the afterglow of WrestleMania, if they're going to go forward with any of these guys, but that's what should happen. Like, go towards SummerSlam, or I don't know if it's Payback next and then SummerSlam, but start building towards that and let these guys that are carrying the show do something.
So let's go ahead and go into that Fatal 4-Way then. I mean, I think the surprise winner was AJ Styles, and it's funny because when I heard that AJ Styles was coming to WWE, my initial reaction was like, okay, well, you know, he's doing really well in New Japan. He can wrestle a New Japan match, and that goes without question. But at the same time, he's had great workers to work with. he's been put in a spot where he's working with good workers. I think it's one of those cases where, and don't get mad, but I think AJ Styles has kind of extended Chris Jericho's career a little bit, right? I mean, Chris Jericho to
it's
me,
just like all those fans that he's getting mad at.
Well, go ahead. Chris Jericho. Yeah. I mean, Chris Jericho can work, but the people that he was working with, I really felt that Jericho wasn't given the freedom to be who he can be in terms of being that monster heel, or not a monster heel, but the kind of calculating heel. And I think Jericho has a perfect foil in AJ Styles, where AJ Styles is that baby face that everybody likes. He has indie cred. He can get it done in the ring. So I think AJ Styles, while Jericho has helped AJ Styles kind of get acclimated to the WWE universe, I think at the same time AJ Styles has extended a Chris Jericho run, where when Roman Reigns came out and says, "I'll take an all comers," and Chris Jericho comes out, instead of me going like, "Ah," I'm like, "Come on, dude," I was actually going like, "Hey, you know what? This guy deserves it, because he's been doing great work for the past 3 months." Mm-hmm. So you have Cesaro come out, and Cesaro was kind of the eye candy, right? Like he was kind of the guy that you're like, "Oh man, like it'd be great if this guy was the number one contender." About halfway through the match, I knew he wasn't going to be. I didn't have a problem with it. And I think all four guys really played their roles really well. Kevin Owens was great. If you watch that match again, Kevin Owens was really, really good in that match. He did the pyramid, the pyramid driver. Had some good spots. Was vocal, but not too vocal, where he's been comical in the past, because the guy that he's working with doesn't know how to react to that. And then AJ Styles comes out and actually wins the number one contender. And I think he was like the one guy that you're looking at going like, well, nah, I mean, he's not going to win, but he actually wins. So I kind of wanted to get your take on whether you think it's deserving, and were you okay with it?
Yeah, I'm okay with it. Is it deserving? Sure, why not? Like, I don't want to. I mean, for the overall of what this guy's done throughout his career, I know they've tried to play up, "Oh, well, you haven't done anything if you haven't done the WWE." I've seen this guy wrestle. He deserves to be there, and based off what he's done in New Japan, if nothing else. I mean, yeah, I know he's capable of performing. Put it this way, I'd rather see him in that spot than Triple H or any other guy that they could possibly try to dust off that was a star 15 years ago. I'd rather see him than Sheamus or any of those guys.
He has all the kind of the non... it's funny, like, the way you evaluate a wrestler and the way I evaluate a wrestler is totally different. I think you kind of look at more in-ring work, whether the guy can get it done in the ring. I look at ring work first and foremost, but I kind of want to know, like, his kind of the aura around him. I think his entrance is good. I think the look that he has is a decent look. I mean, I think if you have him clean shaven, it doesn't work. Even like his song kind of talks about, like, he's a redneck and stuff and everything. But it's not like the typical redneck thing. It's like it's a rap song instead of like kind of like this southern twang type song. He has a decent entrance. He has a kind of good backstory to him. His mic work is much to be said, but we knew that coming in. But this is the best mic work he's ever done. It's not saying much, but it's kind of tailor made for what the WWE said. He fits the WWE machine, and I'm getting to the point now where whatever he does, it's not going to make me mad. I mean, I was pleasantly surprised when he came in. I had no problem with anything that he was doing. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a case where if I'm going to judge anybody on their wrestling ability alone, he's probably the one guy that I do just based on his wrestling ability. And he does good work. The funny thing is with AJ Styles is that, especially during the Jericho match and even during this Fatal 4-Way, he's doing his spots, and I don't want him to do them because I don't want him to win. But when he does those spots, you're like, oh, okay, he's probably going to win. And so it's his spots are believable. His ring work is believable. And
except for his finisher.
Except for the finisher, yeah. But the stuff leading up to it,
yeah.
Right? And the Styles clash at WrestleMania was pretty fucking weak. And they all are, but that one was, I mean, he probably maybe got 1 foot off the ground on that one. At least the one on Raw, he jumped about 3 feet, so it was somewhat believable, but.
So he smashed the guy's, knees and thighs into the into the mat so hard that, that it knocked him out.
You're like, oh, the hamstring. The hamstring pressure. But and he's to the point now where anything he does is I don't care. I mean, in a way that...
In a good way.
In a good way, yeah. It's like, I
don't... It's not going to bother you.
It's not going to bother you. Yeah. Say. Yeah. And he's enjoyable to watch, yep. which... Within the WWE, if you think about a guy that doesn't, like, you look at, like a guy like Cesaro, right? Like, Cesaro has a lot of crowd-pleasing moves, a lot of crowd-pleasing spots, which is fine. But I think over time, Cesaro kind of has to get back to the way he was before, when he was just like a straight wrestler and just wowed you with his wrestling. Mm-hmm. I call it kind of the Daniel Bryan effect, mm-hmm. where Daniel Bryan was so crowd-pleasing that that's all he did. And the Daniel Bryan that the WWE Universe saw... is in no way the wrestler that he was. I mean, his spots were so hot, and you know they're easy to cheer to. That I think, you know, towards the end of Daniel Bryan's career, I think he kind of became a joke of what he was.
He became a victim of his own
ability
and moveset, yeah.
and just like a victim of stuff falling down and making a lot of noise on the podcast. Yeah.
Sounds so, like a bird.
Yeah, it's in Baltimore, Hancock. So there we go. All right, let's wrap it up.
Well, maybe we can transition here. Cause we've been talking a lot about, you know, we talk about Mania quite a bit and then the fallout into the Raw that came after. So last thing that I'll kind of start on that's Raw related and this can transition us into,
I think there's two things we need to talk about.
Okay. Well, we'll see. And maybe this will transition us back into NXT. I'm thinking is, there was a lot of debuts on Raw. Which also I found to be kind of funny. So
the first one, Apollo Crews.
Okay, go ahead and talk about it because you specifically said that you did not like Apollo Crews. Somehow it came up during Mania. So
I asked you, I'm like, what do you think of Apollo Crews? And right. and maybe my hate was overstated. Maybe you read a little bit more than it was. I was just going like, well, you know, what is it about this guy? I think he's pretty green. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what? I'm not a big fan of his, but it has nothing to do with him. Mm-hmm. It's just a case where I think he fits a kind of a mold of what they're looking for, and it works really well. I'm saying if you're going to bring like Apollo Crews, why don't you bring back Shelton Benjamin? I think Shelton Benjamin's way better than Apollo Crews is, and he can wow me.
Well, and that's kind of more to the point is, and I don't even know if Apollo Crews is like now permanently brought up for Raw. They didn't really say that. I don't know if it's just a one-shot exhibition type thing. But there are so many more guys on NXT that are ready to be on Raw than Apollo Crews. I like Apollo Crews. I think that NXT is the perfect place for that guy. I think the work that he can, the things he can learn there, have a little run as the NXT champion is all stuff that would help him. And down the line, I think he's going to be a good WWE star. But there is no way that he has any business being on that show ahead of Samoa Joe, ahead of Finn Balor. Ahead of any number of the tag teams. I don't want to start talking tag teams too much just yet. But it just was, it was silly to me that was the guy. Unless, like, you know, it's just like exhibition one-off thing. You know, that, whatever, that's fine with me.
Well, I don't think it's a one-off. And I think the reason why he's up there, if I can speak the truth, is that number one is that he has the look that they're looking for. And I think he's black. I mean, I know he's black.
Okay, I wasn't sure. It sounded like you might not have been too certain on that.
The question of his African Americanism is in question. No, it's not. But he is. You know, he's a minority. You know, he's a minority star that they can build around. It's kind of the catch-22 of being a minority. So I'm not taking that away from him. But yeah, there's definitely better guys out there. I'm not going to hate him just to hate him. I think he's green. He doesn't have, even in NXT, he didn't really have a personality. And I think I think you're setting yourself up to fail if you want to push this guy. And he's going to, you know, he's going to kind of come kind of like the Big E route when Big E first came out, right? Like they pushed, you know, he was a heel, then they made him a face, they pushed him to Intercontinental, nothing happened, and then he was just kind of quiet for 3-4 months.
Yeah, I think the comparison I would probably make more would be a more athletic Lashley.
Yes, that's who he reminds me of, Lashley.
And yeah, a lot more athletic than Lashley. But I just think ultimately he's not ready. He's not ready to cut a promo on a WWE level. and that's really going to hinder him. And yeah, it's just not ready. I mean, I think he's going to be good, but it's not the time. But all right.
Okay, so let's go with your boy, Dolph Ziggler versus Baron Corbin. And I kind of want to get your idea of how you felt that Dolph Ziggler got used with Baron Corbin.
Actually, was pretty satisfied with that. I mean, that's kind of Dolph's role now is the jobber to the stars. I mean, he is kind of now what Jericho was 3 years ago. Right, he's a guy that, you know, everyone knows that he's a great worker. You know, he deserves to be. Everyone wants to see Dolph Ziggler on every show, and he'll go out there and put on a good match with whoever they put him up against. And at least this time, he got some protection on a double countout. Like, he didn't just have to go straight up lose to some guy fresh out of NXT, which they don't generally offer him that courtesy. So good for you, Dolph.
What's your idea? I mean, so I said probably 3-4 months ago that I thought Baron Corbin had something. And you educated me on kind of how he kind of had like a Goldberg run in NXT, and you were kind of saying like, yeah, I mean, he's no great shakes. I mean, without getting too much into the NXT paper, you know, NXT takeover, and then what he did in WrestleMania and what he did with Raw, where do you stand with Baron Corbin now?
I'm fine with him. I think he's a little green. I still think there's a lot better guys in NXT, but I would say in terms of the WWE system, he's paid his dues, and there's something there. I don't know if they're going to be able to figure out how to use it, because now you're talking about competing with, say, like a Ryback, right? He's in that kind of category. I think he's a lot better than Ryback, but what I'm saying in terms of what he can do. Big, strong guy, physical guy that's not really a great promo, and how are you going to use this guy? And I feel like there's a lot of overlap between what he is and what Ryback is.
I think if Corbin ever gets it, I think he can kind of be a kind of like a Jake the Snake type character, you know, like this cold, calculating guy. I'm not saying that that's what he is now. I think he has the foundation to be one, and I think he's kind of like this dark horse type character. And you know, he has a look that I haven't seen in a long time, and it's kind of like, that's why I kind of bring up Jake the Snake, because Jake the Snake, when Jake the Snake was kind of in his prime, it wasn't in WWE, it was in like AWA or something like that.
Smoky Mountain.
Yeah, and he was just like this tall, no, not Smoky Mountain. I think it was more like AWA or, you know, some Carolina territories and stuff, maybe a Florida territory, but he was like this kind of like this tall, lanky guy. Just looked tough, but didn't have like the physique, you know, like this overwhelming physique, right? You know, and Corbin's just kind of like this long, lean guy. You know, he's tough. He has a good size to him, and if he ever learns how to kind of cut a promo, I think he'd be a very interesting character. But that's 4 or 5 years down the line, and that's kind of things that it's so stacked right now that got, you know, like guys like Ryback, you know, if you try to shoot him to the moon, it's not going to work. And when you add to the fact that neither one of these guys can cut a promo, we'll see what happens. But, you know, can Corbin pleasantly surprise me in like the next like year? Maybe he can, but I think he has the tools there. The thing that lacks is his mic work. The one thing that is definitely not lacking in terms of looks or mic work is End Zone Cass. Mm-hmm. And I thought their debut was great. I mean, it's just, it, you know, talk about like, if nobody knows who Enzo and Kaz are, and this is the first time that you were introduced to these guys,
they blew.
I mean, I saw them in NXT, and I think I saw them maybe once or twice. And the first time I saw them, I was like, okay. But the second time I saw them, I was like, man, they got something going here. And Enzo's great on the mic. Kaz, for what he is plays very well off of Enzo. Mm-hmm. I thought they had a great debut, and I thought Enzo's mic work. This guy's ready to go right now, and having Kaz right next to him is even better.
Yeah.
And even the program they're going to set up with the Dudley Boys, I think that's a perfect setup for him.
Yeah, it's funny. I think there's a lot of similarities with Corbin and Enzo and Kaz, in that like both of them have been in NXT for a pretty decent amount of time. I don't think either one of them is the best at what they do. Like, I don't think Enzo and Kaz are the best tag team in NXT. Okay, but I think they've paid their dues. And then both of them, oddly enough, are going to the main roster, having never been the respective champions in NXT. Okay, that's it. I got no problem with those guys going. I think it's good. I think it's good. I think the mic work is their best thing. I think, you know, it's going to remain to be seen exactly what they can do in the ring. Because even on NXT, it's like they would talk the game, they get in, and then they lose. They pretty much lost almost every time to every main tag team they got in NXT. So now all of a sudden you're going to shoot them up.
But those matches that they lost, I mean, they were good workers.
I'm fine. I think they should be winning more. That's all I'm saying. It's like you bring them in having like very little pedigree with all the matches that they've lost. They haven't been protected at all in NXT even.
But look what they've been able to do, right? I mean, yeah. And then that's kind of the same thing. Like Enzo, I think is probably Enzo's the best talker I think to come out of NXT in a long time. Mm-hmm. And that's to me. You know, so here we go again, right? Like, you're talking about the in-ring work. I'm talking about the characters and the mic work, the entrance as well.
Well, I think the mic work is what's going to carry them on the main roster.
Yeah.
I think they're still going to have to get to the point where they can back it up in the ring. But I'm more than willing to watch and have them the opportunity to do that. The thing I'm curious, as weird as it is, I'm curious to see if they lose anything without having Carmella. Not that she's like any great shakes or whatever, but just she kind of fit what they were.
She was the thing I liked the least about.
Right, but it worked, right? And the thing is, but like the thing that I kind of got was like in NXT, like there was a little bit of like comedy side to what they were doing, but without her, what they did on Raw, like it was dead serious. Like Enzo cut a real serious promo, even though he got all his proverbial shit in, like. He was very focused, and like he looked like he was ready to go right there. And I thought it really worked for what.
And then that's what I liked, you know, like the comedy aspect was taken away. And when he's in there cutting his promo, I'm going like, okay, I've seen this before, but there was something different. And not until you brought up Carmella, I was like, that's what I liked about it, right? And then the guy was like spitting darts at people on the mic, and it. You pair him with D-Von is like the perfect like foil, right? Like you can bag on D-Von, but Bubba, and actually it was funny because he called him Bubba, he called him Bully, or he called him like Bull or something like that. He made a reference to Bully Ray, Enzo did.
Yeah.
But you know, Bubba's good on the mic, and that's kind of like the same thing I'm kind of talking about is like AJ Styles is extending Chris Jericho, and whether you believe that or not, is up for debate.
No.
But I think Enzo and Kaz can really bring out the personalities of the Dudley Boys, where before, I mean, they shined when they had that little spot with Roman Reigns. You really can't do anything verbally with the Usos because they're so nondescript. But now you have guys that can go back and forth, and I'm hoping that the WWE itself and the WWE Universe can finally like recognize, hey, like Bubba can cut it, right? He can cut it on the mic, and D-Von's like the perfect guy to have for him. It's kind of, you know, the teams are very similar in terms of the personalities, right? I think Kaz brings a little bit more intimidation than D-Von does, but D-Von does his things to make Bully or Bubba Ray look really good, and Enzo's just Enzo, and I was blown away by that.
Yeah, and I'll say this just to kind of like, you know, support where I'm coming from on this. Back to the comedy side of it, right? I think like, if you want to come out and cut this serious promo like he did, and it really worked, that only works as long as you win, okay? Because when it gets to a certain point, if you want to keep talking that way, but you keep getting your ass kicked all the time, that's when you need Carmella, or you need something that kind of like lightens up the mood like with it and makes it kind of like, you know, somewhat of a comedy gimmick, right? So I have no problem, like, you know, I didn't know that I could see that very serious side like he had. And I liked what I saw, but I think they need to win at least their fair share of matches to be able to continue to come out and talk like that and be taken seriously.
And so you've seen them more, right, than I have. So I really can't say I think whatever they do on the mic is going to be the main thing. I think they're okay losing all the time just because I think they're entertaining. But at the same time, I think if Enzo reminds me a lot of Colin McGregor, like just that kind of style that they have in terms of the way they talk a lot of trash.
Colin McGregor,
not Colin McGregor. What's his name? The dude from UFC.
Connor, sorry, my fault. No, I was trying to think of a wrestler that
you're... Yeah, but he reminds a lot of Conor McGregor, right? That's the same type of kind of in-your-face kind of attitude. Definitely, they go by their own way and they live by their own rules. And I think, you know, if you can tap that with Enzo, I think they are already starting to tap in that with him. But I think you're right. Like, if they win, you know, and they can get hot shot to the title, and I don't think there will be a problem with it, right? Because they can back it up on the mic. And I'll be very interested to see. I want that verbal. I want the verbal intercourse, right? Like, I want, like, a good talker. The good talker versus the good talker. Throw everything out, you know, on the mic and then actually get in the ring. That's how you build feuds, right? That's how you build, you know.
Yeah, or even if they get into it with the New Day, right? I mean, I think that could be some really interesting verbal back and forth between the two of them.
All right, so let's go.
You got
one more.
I want to make sure that, because I think you could just completely skip off these guys, and I want to bag them. They also announced that the Vaudevillains are coming up to SmackDown, and I think that's a big fucking waste of time.
I don't know who the Vaudevillains are.
They're like they've been on
NXT. Oh yeah. The guy with the mustache and all.
Yeah. I'm not saying that they're terrible workers. I think it's just it's a stupid gimmick, and I don't think it's gonna play well. I don't even know, like, there's certain gimmicks that for whatever reason work in NXT. I think it's because it's a small, intimate room and they get to see them quite a bit or whatever. I don't think that their gimmick is going to play at all on the large stage. And, again, like, yeah, some of these other teams, like if I'm going to be consistent with what I said, like, guys paid their dues and have been brought up. They've definitely been there long enough to pay their dues. I just personally don't think they're very good. And I just have a heart. And there's, without even thinking, there's, like, minimum three much better tag teams in NXT right now that could go up to the top and be legit. Like, American Alpha could go right now and they could be tag team champions. Revival could go right now and they could be tag team champions. I know that's only two. Blake and Murphy, I think, have something better going than what the Vaudevillains have. So, and they don't even have any personality, but just at least in ring, like, they got something pretty decent going. I think it's a big waste of time, and I think they're setting up the Vaudevillains to fail. I saw someone online kind of comparing it to, like, someone brought it up, and then they're like, you think it's like something like Adam Rose? And I think, like, that's not a bad comparison. It's like, you know, I don't think Adam Rose is a terrible worker. I think he's saddled with awful gimmicks, and he can't do anything with them with where he is. And then ultimately, they're going to figure out they don't know what to do with them, and then they're going to be like another Ascension team. They're there, they're so-so, but they can't go anywhere because their gimmick sucks, and they don't resonate with the crowd. But you don't know who they are.
So. No. I've seen them a couple times, and I don't know, man. There's something about them.
You like them?
I don't know if it's a case where I like them. I think I don't dislike them, and for me, the jury is still out. I think if they protect them, right? I think it might be a gimmick that might pay off. I mean, you're talking about this company that had the Rougeau brothers, right? And the Rougeau brothers, they sucked, but they protected them. They made them champions, and all of a sudden you're like kind of like, oh, okay, you know, like I can respect what they're doing. You know, I think, not watching NXT all the time, just kind of seeing it, like I get like a, I have to make a judgment right away. And I saw the Vaudevillains, I was kind of like, okay, you know, who are these guys? I mean, it's like, it's kind of like this crazy gimmick. The guy with the mustache is you know, he has a look about him. For me, the jury's out. We might be pleasantly surprised, but I can also see where you're coming from too.
I'd say if you haven't seen him that much, watch him some more. You'll come around. Try. I don't think they're terrible workers. I just don't think that gimmick's gonna work at all. I think it's pretty lame.
I think either one way they move the needle, one way or the other, right? I'm saying one way or the other, either. They move it, and I think the way WWE's looking at it is going like, okay, like, these guys are like something we don't have. It's something that's fresh, at least in their minds. I mean, because you are talking about WWE writers, right?
It is definitely an original gimmick. I mean, yeah. I can't even think of like another gimmick that they're.
But at the same time, like, you had like Bo Dallas, right? That was a very original gimmick, and they didn't. You know, they didn't really support him. You know, like, I think Bo Dallas was kind of. he was on the fringe, right? Like, he was either going to fail or succeed. And in order for him to succeed, you would have to kind of, you would have to make him win a couple of big matches. And I think he would face, like, these guys, that like a guy like Ryback or something like that, and then he became a jobber, and he lost all credibility in his gimmick. Yeah. And, you know, and I think, you know, I think Bo Dallas is one of these guys that, you know, if they would have protected him and kind of made him a guy that you hated, I think he falls on the same line as Damian Sandow, right? I mean, I think both of these guys had gimmicks that were fresh. You know, and Damian Sandow had the genius gimmick, but he did a, I think he did it a lot better. He wasn't a pansy like a Leaping Lanny was.
Whoa. But, be careful over there.
Well, Leaping Lanny was very effeminate, let's just say that.
He's working a gimmick, man. Living the gimmick.
Yeah, but... So, but I thought both of the, you know, the Adam Rose gimmick was just terrible from the start.
Right.
I mean, I still want to know who the flipping bunny is, but
Justin Gabriel.
Yeah, sure, sure, Dad. But yeah, I mean, it's and with their history, I think once they're done with the gimmick and they're not seeing this like it's taken off, I think they'll job them out. So, past experiences with the WWE, I mean, I think Damian Sandow by far is way better than anybody else. I mean, hell. He was in WrestleMania. He got the biggest pop out of anybody, you know, in the Battle Royal, if not in the Battle Royal, but in general as well. And you know, it's like you guys can't see this. And so, yeah, when I first saw the Vaudevillains, I'm like, who are these guys? I'm like, all right, who are these guys? And like, okay, they might have something going here. And then I stopped. I didn't see them again. But I want to be. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt.
Sure. Fair enough.
Okay.
All right. Well, I mean, I think. Like I said, that, you know, some NXT recent call-ups here, transition this to finish up with this be, I guess, the main event of the podcast, which was really the main event of the wrestling weekend, even though it came on first, NXT show on Friday night. You want to go straight to your boy, or you want to talk about, you want to build up to that?
When you have the worst match being Austin Aries and Baron Corbin, that's saying a lot, because it was a serviceable match. It was, you know what type of match that was? That was a WWE match, right? That was a WWE match where it's mid-card, serviceable, but it's generally one that you'd probably fast forward, or at least I would fast forward. You know, you speak the world of Austin Aries. My judgment's still out on him. From what I saw, he can work. I just think it was his first match. He's going against a guy like Baron Corbin. He's not the general that he should be in the ring, because it was his first match, I think. You season him a little bit more within the way WWE puts together a match. I think the guy has a bright future with him. I liked what I saw, but you go. I mean, you go straight down the line in that card. The Dash and Dawson versus your guys.
American Alpha.
American Alpha. American Alpha was good, but I mean Dash and Dawson. I mean to me they were the match. The American Alpha, they're a good team, very athletic in the ring. I don't think they can tell a story yet. I think Dash and Dawson can, but I was very happy with that match. I thought that match was great, and it was a case where I think Dash and Dawson are by leaps and bounds better than American Alpha. But when American Alpha beat them, American Alpha is kind of like the Killer Bees or like the British Bulldogs, right? Like just two guys that are. Very entertaining to watch in the ring, but they're the baby face, and Dash and Dawson is a typical heel one, and they remind me a lot of the Four Horsemen, so I'm going to gravitate towards that, and I think that's the key right there, right? Like I think that was a match that could have been in 1986, 1987, 1988, and it would have been like any other tag team match during that time, and that's when the tag team division, that's when tag team wrestling was at its height, and that's what it reminded me of. Very, very, very well played match.
Yeah, and there were some rough spots in there, and even on the side of the Revival. But yeah, they you're talking about Charlotte working like the heel gimmick to a T in that triple threat. They work the heel tag team like every kind of double team, every
outside of the ring rule. Yeah, that guy crawling
under the ring.
Yeah.
Right, it was done perfectly, and you're right. They were like the true like to a T heels, and American Alpha were the white meat babyface tag team. And despite the fact that there was a couple of rugged spots in there, like it was a very entertaining match all the way through. And then
but those rugged spots weren't rugged, right? I mean,
they worked through it really well, and then they moved right on, and you didn't worry about it anymore.
It wasn't the epitome of the match. It wasn't like the it wasn't the crescendo of the match.
Right.
They had other stuff to pull out.
Yeah, and I thought you know, I think American Alpha, like, again, talking about like what we're looking for in wrestlers. I mean, these guys are just straight pure technicians, both of them, with a lot of athleticism, and that's what I like to see. You know, I think you're right. You know, I didn't really think about it, but maybe it is missing that experience of them to tell the story and do that side of it. And while I do, like I'm saying, I think they are a better tag team than Enzo and Kaz. I know for sure they're a better tag team than the Vaudevillains are. I have no problem with them staying down, like developing what they got, learning, and then coming up at some point.
They are so athletically gifted that you don't think that anybody can beat them, right?
Well, it's in their case, their athletic gift is the deodorant, right? It hides the scent of the greenness. And you don't even kind of realize like how inexperienced that they are, because you're just impressed with like the amount of suplexes you're seeing and
the drop kicks,
right? Yeah, it's all there. So I mean, but I think they do need some more seasoning down there in NXT. But at some time, you know, within the next 6 months, maybe. I mean, Revival, you could take those guys up right now; they could be your tag team champions. American Alpha have the talent to do that as well, but I think it'll be better for them if they learn down there.
The best credit I can give them is, you give them like a best out of three versus Dash and Dawson, mm-hmm. and have them win, mm-hmm. and I'm totally fine with that. I mean, even though, I mean, Dash and Dawson, they are a tag team that I haven't seen in a long time. I've seen them wrestle a couple times. Here we go again. Yeah, I'm like a broken record. I've seen them wrestle a couple times before, but this is like the first match where I saw with anything on the line, and I was blown away by them. And which one has the beard? Is that
that would be Dawson.
Yeah, so Dawson. Dawson's the star of that tag team, but Dash did so much stuff outside the ring. I mean, he is probably one of the best outside of the ring workers of way he manipulates stuff. I was totally blown away by the stuff that this guy could do.
Okay, when you're saying the guy with the beard, because I think they both have a beard, right?
The one with the bald head guy
with the beard. Okay, yeah, that's Dawson. Yeah. See, I think Dash is the star of that team. I think he's the better overall performer. I think. Dawson has the guile, right? I think he knows, like...
Well, he has a look, too. Like,
he has that...
He's just like a throwback.
He has that prick heel look that you're looking for.
Yeah, but Dash, I mean, but I think really Dash made that match because of all the stuff he was doing outside the ring. Mm-hmm. I mean, the stuff he was doing, the way he was manipulating spots and interfering with you know... American Alpha is starting to do their comeback, and then Dash turns it off with an outside interference. It was just the storytelling was there. I mean, it's like a classic match. Like, you're waiting for the comeback. The comeback happens, they turn it off. I mean, this is like textbook 1980s stuff. Like that all the old timers talk about whenever you listen on podcasts about the way wrestling was then as compared now. It was a slow paced match, which is kind of funny because it was a fast-paced match, but the storytelling was slow-paced. It was a great way to start off the show, and you know, I don't know what else to say. There were so many good matches on that card. This was the first one, and what I really liked about it was that the bar was raised with that match, and everybody else after them had to beat them. I think they had a slow spot with Austin Aries and Baron Corbin. I don't want to get into that match. It was serviceable. It came down, and then the second that you had Nakamura versus Sami Zayn, the bar just got raised over again.
Okay, so you want to go to that, or you want to talk about the Divas match or the main event?
Well, let's go ahead and talk about what was your favorite match of
Nakamura.
That card? Okay, so let's wait on that until last. So you had Bayley versus Oscar.
Yeah,
and you know, Bayley has a lot of work to do. I buy into what she's doing. I think it's a case where her vanilla stick gimmick, where and just kind of the stuff that she has to do with the crowd and the way the crowd reacts to her, I think that hinders her a little bit, and I think that really takes away from her performance. And I think at the same time it enhances her performance because I think people overlook her shortcomings. But it doesn't
enhance her performance. It enhances the perception of her performance,
and so people like you and me can see that. But at the same time, I think there's a lot of pressure with that comes with that as well. And I think she's been able to handle that very well. I think her stick is getting pretty old, I hope that she doesn't rely on that too much, because I see every match I've seen her, I've seen her improve. I think the thing is like, you know, you had Sasha Banks versus Bayley match, and that was really like a Sasha Banks match. And Bayley, you know, you can't have that match without Bayley, right? And it's the character of Bayley that really made that match. You know, Sasha did it on the technical side, but Sasha had an opponent in Bayley, and her opponent was Bayley's story, which worked really well. And I think it took a an opponent like Asuka, who just is a straight heel technician. Is, you know, she's not formidable by any means, but she just knows how to work. And I thought the finish of Bayley tapping out was a perfect finish. And there were some nice spots. I mean, Bayley has some nice spots. I mean, I think, you know, anything she does off the middle rope into the face of Asuka, and then her high cross body, and her on, you know, she's one of the better performers on the top rope or sitting on the turnbuckle. Bayley had a nice match. Asuka had a better match, but I thought it was a great match through and through. And I didn't go away from that match going like, oh, Bayley didn't have that great of a match. And I thought both of them performed very well.
Yeah, no, I'll agree with what you said for the most part. That the more I watch Bayley, I think the better she's getting in the ring. And for me, that was the best match I've seen Bayley have. I think Asuka was better, and she deserved to win. But Bayley's every part, you know, she pulled her end in that match too, and I think she's doing a good job. I think she's where she needs to be. And she needs to stay in NXT. Get better. Let the three divas that are up there now kind of establish themselves, so that by the time that they bring her up, she's more seasoned, she's ready to go, and then she can hit the ground running, rather than have it be kind of a more jumbled mess with like who's the number one contenders and who are the people that should be fighting for that women's title.
The biggest problem I have with Bayley, which isn't her fault, is that they put her in the same category as Charlotte, Sasha Banks, and
she's not. In that.
Yeah, exactly. And for them to push her up right now would be a mistake. It'd kind of be like the same thing. It'd be like a Paige debut, right? Where they put her against AJ. It was that botched match, and it really set everything off on the wrong foot. And, you know, Paige, I think Paige is, you know, Paige is one of, and Paige and Natty are two wrestlers, I think, that have a lot more to offer. But Bayley needs to be seasoned. I would really like to see. It's kind of like another one too, where I really want to see like her and Asuka go at it and have a lot of matches together. Whoever comes out on top with that, I'm totally fine with. Asuka everything she does just really works. I mean, she kind of has this crazy personality. Her entrance was with that mask was great. And then when you get down to it, she allowed Bayley to shine in certain spots, but you knew it was Asuka's match from the beginning, and there was drama in that tap out, right? Where
she didn't really tap; she just passed out.
But there was drama in that, yeah. Right? And storytelling was good on that match.
Yeah, like, you know, she made a couple like good lunges to get to the rope and got, you know, kind of dragged back to the middle, and yeah, nothing she could do. They protected her that she didn't tap, right? Like, you know, so she doesn't. She has the John Cena never give up thing going for her. I have no problem with what she's doing. I think she's doing a good job. I would say that she's exactly where she needs to be for a little bit, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I think down the line, I think she is going to be a good women's wrestler up on the main roster. But now is not the time. All right, main event then. I thought I thought it was a good match. You know, that blood really hindered the beginning of the match, because Joe was just on a roll. And they couldn't figure out whether they wanted to just stop it and close the cut and get it done. They kind of try to, like, you know, like put a Band-Aid on it, so to speak. And then every couple of minutes they were going back trying to stop the bleeding, and it just kind of killed all the early momentum of the match.
Well, that's the biggest problem I had with the match, was that when he got cut open, all of a sudden this match became real. And I think if they allowed him to bleed, it's not glorified bleeding. I mean, he actually got hurt. Yeah. What they should have done is to check it. It was a deep cut, but it wasn't in any way a life threatening type cut. Right. And I was thinking a Muda scale, right? Like, yeah, this is a Muda scale match, right? Right? Like, you know, how much is this guy going to bleed? Mm-hmm. And for him to have that gash under his eye and blood's going all over the place and stuff like that, if they would have allowed him to keep on doing that match, I think that match, we probably would have been... We would still probably talk about the Nakamura match at the end, but it's kind of more of a case where they're neck and neck, and they're probably, like, side by side.
Yeah, and we're not, like blood glory hounds at all.
No.
Like, if it happens, it happens.
Yeah.
Let them work through it. And, you know, Joe, I think, was very frustrated that they kept stopping the match. I don't need to see, you know, I'm not, you know, I don't need to see blood for blood's sake and stuff, but if it happens and it's, yeah, not a, a really threatening one, you know, let him go through it. It's still a wrestling match. That said, it was still a good match.
So, Baylor and Joe have something that works really well for them, right? I mean, because Joe, here you have, like, Finn Balor, who is the star of NXT, right? Like, he has all the credit in the world. And when he faces Samoa Joe, Joe can be himself and be dominant. And then Finn Balor can come back and do his stuff. And it doesn't seem like it's rehearsed. I mean, I thought the match flowed really well. The storytelling was great in that match. And both of these guys were on top of their game. I think Joe outshined Finn Balor. But that in no way takes anything away from Finn Balor. I mean, I thought Balor was great. The only problem I had was the finish. And it was just kind of one of those things where he was trying to get him in a sleeper or whatever it is, and then Balor kicks off the turnbuckle and turns it into a pin. Mm-hmm. That works, but it would only work if there was more back and forth. I thought really this match, there was a lot of Joe in this match. And I think that's a case where, yeah, this guy in Finn Balor who's really good, and I'm not gonna, and Finn Balor has all the tools. I mean, great look, great style, but the level of being a veteran shined through, and I thought Joe was the catalyst of that match, and he needed a better finish than that. You can't have a flash pin in that match.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, if you want to do a flash pin in some of the lead up matches that gets Joe more angry and gives him more reason to think that in a straight match he's going to win, that's fine. But at the what's your big like NXT pay per view kind of blowout event? Yeah, that you don't want your main event to end up with a flash pin. So I agree 100%. I really wanted Joe to win. I feel like Joe's kind of the most undervalued guy in all of professional wrestling in a lot of ways. And I think if what I'm hearing, you know, even though it didn't happen on Raw, you know, a lot of like speculation that Balor is going to be going up to the main roster real soon. I think you need to let Joe have that title run, especially if you're going to hold him down in NXT for a while. Joe didn't need NXT to be like, he could have gone legit to the main roster, not a problem. Okay. But if he's staying down there, you should really build that show around him. Like, you use it to build up other guys, but with him as kind of like your default champion and his, like, him being the proving ground on who's ready to ascend, right? And I think that, like, him winning that title against Finn, who's been, you know, probably the best champion. I don't want to say that, you know, just in the time I've been watching for like 2 years. Like, him and Owens probably been the two best champions I've seen down there. Let Joe win that match, let Balor go do his thing, and then let Joe be the standard bearer going forward on NXT.
Well, I think Finn with the NXT championship, and he makes a jump to Raw, I think solidifies him a little bit more. I think it solidifies NXT a little bit more. People go like, hey, if this guy's a champion, you know, why aren't we watching NXT? It's kind of the same thing that what they did with Kevin Owens. Mm-hmm. What I like about Joe is that the last time I saw Joe wrestle was in TNA, and it was only like spot ones I would see here and there, and he'd face guys like Kurt Angle and stuff where it was like, you know, Kurt is Kurt Angle, and I think Joe has a hard time with guys that have a bigger pedigree than him in terms of name value. Joe has only gotten better. I mean, I haven't seen him in a long time, but I saw him this match. It was still a Joe match, but it was also within the framework of a WWE style match, and he was going against a guy that has a bigger name than he does, and I want to get into this as kind of like our overarching question, but Joe is doing his match within the WWE confines. It's still I think it's a different match than what WWE is used to. I think it's a little bit too real, but if he's able to translate that and keep on doing those type of matches, and then when he goes up to the main roster, we might see kind of a shift in terms of the way matches are presented. And this kind of goes into Shinsuke Nakamura, because I had a lot of concerns about him coming into a WWE product. And the match versus Sami Zayn is probably in the running for match of the year. It was the best match I've seen probably this year. And I'm not even going to say that it was all Nakamura, because I think Zayn did a lot in that match. I think Zayn did a lot. I think Zayn did more than Nakamura did. I really started appreciating Zayn, because Zayn did the job for Shinsuke Nakamura, but Zayn was great. He was great in that match, and it was like watching a New Japan match. And I was once again blown away by what Shinsuke can do, but Zayn is right there too.
I think it was like a thing where I know how good Nakamura is, you know how good he is, but I think you just needed to see it, right? There's that question, like, is what he does going to translate into the WWE? Are they going to tinker too much? I feel like, you know, even though most of the problem with Itami is health-related, like, just that whole thing of changing his name to Hideo Itami, and it's just pointless stuff, changing it for change's sake. And, like, not letting him use the GTS, probably because of CM Punk, even though he invented the move, right? So they let Nakamura be Nakamura. But I thought his entrance song, I'll go back on your side now, the whole aura, as it were.
Which I didn't even watch it.
His entrance.
I did, but I wasn't paying attention to it. I think I was in anaphylactic shock just seeing this guy in a WWE ring.
I like the song. Like, his entrance was what it was. Everything worked, and they just let him be him. In the ring, they didn't change. The only thing, and this is small potatoes, and I'll quibble with it, but there's no need. There's no reason to change the name of his finish from Bama Ye to Kanuka or whatever the hell they're trying to.
Kanuka. Well, it's a different move too. I mean, it's kind of like a.
No, it's not. It's just.
It is. The main move, you know, when he does the knee for the. If you ever look that off into the fucking space again, I'll fucking knock you out, dude. It's not the straight knee. I mean, he kind of did like a spinning knee on it.
Yeah, but he did the same straight knee off the middle rope as the off setup. The middle rope, and then yeah. But he's got so many variations. Any kind of he does a running knee, leg, whatever. It's Bama Ye. So, I mean, I think he did, and kind of what I said was true. Like when we saw it at the angles they showed on TV, it would kind of looked okay. But if you saw some of the still photos on like social media later. The way he kind of had that twist in, like, that was a legitimate, like, that looked like a knockout blow to me. But he's done stuff similar to that before. He's done, like spinning Bama Ye and stuff like that. So it's all that move. I don't think that's going to be what his finish is every time, like, in that exact way. So it's a waste of time changing the name on that. But that's a very small thing to quibble with. Everything else, what he's done in the ring, his personality, his charisma in the ring with the moves that he does, it was all just like the matches he's been doing in New Japan. So I think that's great. And I think, yeah, it's good. You got a guy like Sami Zayn that can work that style. There's only a few guys that already know that style, right? He's one. Devitt's one. Jericho can do it. Styles can do it. Joe can do it. Okay, so these are going to be some of the guys that, if they're going to make this Nakamura thing work, those are going to be the guys, for at least for a while, that he's going to have to be facing. And I think I really, really look forward to Samoa Joe, Shinsuke Nakamura in NXT at some point, and that should be for a title.
The couple things I took away from that match is that one is Nakamura is probably the best entertainer in the ring. Like I when you know he's telling Sami Zayn to bring it with his with his arms and stuff with his hands, and then Zayn has a great flurry of stuff, and then he tells Nakamura to bring it, and then the look on Nakamura's face, like, of just like kind of like, oh god, like, you know, I can't believe you just did this to me, really sold that match. And it's like, okay, you know, like, they're allowing him to do what he does. He had his good vibrations in there. He had the kind of the head to the stomach during the break off and stuff.
Yeah, that was the only one that was kind of like not as, didn't seem to have the same effect as,
yeah, cause, yeah,
but whatever.
Whatever, we're quibbling. And Zayn did this one spot where, so here's the thing with Zayn, which I really like, is that in a span of like 20 seconds, he did a he did a La Plancha out of the ring. I actually think I'm using La Plancha in the right term this way, but he does, you know, he kind of does that body flip, you know, without using the ropes and flips over. And then he follows it up with a high cross body. So it's like you have like, you know, you have like, you know, you have this guy within a span of 20 seconds span 30 years of wrestling, right? Of like what a high flyer was, right? Like he can do the high flying stuff now, and then he can still do like a textbook high cross body. So I thought that, you know, just small things like that I saw when I was like, you know, this is what I'm going like, you know, Zane is untapped potential. I mean, he needs to have like a long match in WWE for people to really, really appreciate what he does. He is kind of, you know, we talk about Triple H as like enhancement talent or like bring out the best in some of the guy. Zane is the same way. If Zane ever gets a run and gets protected, I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. I'm very impressed with Zane. I think right now the problem that he has is that he has Kevin Owens, and Kevin Owens, of course, is the more dominant of the two. And then he goes against a guy like Shinsuke Nakamura, and I don't think there's any other wrestler that can give a good of a debut match with Shinsuke than Zayn could. So I thought Zayn did a great job, and then they went New Japan, and those forearm shots, and it was like those were brutal. I mean, yeah. that's like a Shii and Makabe type shots they were doing, and that's what I kind of want to bring up, because I really feel that. You have guys like Kevin Owens. You have guys like Finn Balor. Guys that know, even guys like AJ Styles. Guys that know how to tell great stories and have been involved in a lot of like matches of the year contenders over the past 3 years. Joe can do that type of match. Shinsuke can do that type of match. Do you think somewhere down the line, if they ever get called to the main roster, can they change the match of WWE, and will it be better for it, or will it be worse?
Yeah, I mean, I think they can. I think you're seeing it, right? That all the guys they're bringing in from the indies, all the guys they're bringing in from Japan now, there was a stigma against all of that. And within the last 6 months, there's just a flood. Like, even, you know, almost equal to anything we saw, like, in the ring on NXT was Kota Ibushi is basically on the way. Bobby Roode is on the way. All these other guys, even more influx of these indie and NXT guys, and they're bringing them in to do what they do, not to just kind of break them down. Because that was kind of the old thinking, like, we don't want guys that have learned stuff elsewhere. We'd rather have some guy that's done nothing and we can teach him exactly the way we want to. And they're realizing that, like, there's a lot of value to be had in the experience that these other guys bring. And like AJ, straight to the main roster. I think Guns and Gallows are probably going to go straight to the main roster. Okay, and they're gonna, while they can work within the framework, with, like you were saying earlier, of the WWE style, they're gonna be them. They're bringing them in to be them. Okay, if they wanted them to go cookie cutter WWE, they would force them to go NXT. So I think that, yeah, I think that is gonna happen. But I think it's all gonna come down to at some point, either by force or them waking up, the creative team's gonna have to realize that they can't keep going to the same well, bringing in Batista and Triple H and Undertaker and dusting all these guys off and relying on all these guys every single year. At some point, they're going to have to say, we've got a loaded roster of talent. Let's make these guys legitimate stars. And that's still what's lacking, okay? It's like, there's no reason why Dolph Ziggler shouldn't be, like, if Dolph Ziggler's not considered to be a main event WrestleMania kind of guy right now, that's WWE creative fault. If Cesaro's not, maybe not now but because of the injuries, but if not on the verge of within the next year or two being a guy that you could say, that guy, I'd be comfortable putting him in the main event at WrestleMania, that's WWE's failure. So they got all these guys that have everything you can need, okay? But at some point, you've got to let them do it, and you got to stop being safe, say, let's put some new blood in there and see what happens, okay? People are clamoring for that. That's what people want to see. They're going to react well to it. But you got to let it happen. You can't keep stifling all this young talent.
And one thing with these indie guys is that, yeah, they have learned a different style. Like Dolph has kind of come through the system, so he works what is expected out of a jobber for WWE. Really flashy, does good stuff, but never's going to get over that hump. I think what you have here, and it's funny when there was like kind of like the mystery guy for the end of Raw. It's like, well, hell, I mean, like, Shinsuke was so good. Maybe they're looking at me like, this guy's ready now, which he is. Mm-hmm. With him, it's like, I want to see him in NXT for a while just because I want him to be protected. I want to see the good matches, and I don't want it to get messed up when he goes to the main roster.
I think he needs to be there for a little while, too, to be honest. Not saying that he isn't as talented or more than anybody else they got. Just that there's the language, there's learning to work. This different style is completely different than Japan. At least, like, with AJ, with Guns and Gallows, they started in America, they went over there, and now they're coming back. They've already worked this, like, American style before. So it's a very easy transition for them. But it is brand new for Nakamura. I think the more I think about it, you know, they should be in the Nakamura business, like, invested for the long haul. So there's no need to get, like, some hotshot move. Let him develop exactly how you want to do it the right way and bring him up. That's what I think.
And let him do what he does.
I don't want
him to learn American wrestling, you know?
I think
he's good enough but he doesn't have a style.
But he needs to learn how to work with the other guys that he's trying to work with and communicate with the guys he's trying to work with. And that's what he needs to learn. I don't want him to change his style either. Okay, but he needs to be able to, like, Sami Zayn, I'm going to assume they've worked together before. Or not, if not, they know they've worked in that same style that they know how to go to that match already. Which was a lot of reason why it made sense, you know, to put Jericho with AJ Styles, even though both of them know the American style. Like, they've been to the same places, they've wrestled the same different styles, so it makes sense. And then let him get familiar with the people he's got to work with first. That's all I'm saying. Don't change his style. I don't want him to change his style.
This with the way that WWE is right now, it reminds me a lot when you had the Canadian influx in the 80s, right? In the mid 80s, you know, Bret Hart,
The Rougeau brothers,
but even like it's more like it's right now. It seems more it's like it's territory based now, where you know you even have guys like Steamboat, you know, Flair, Steamboat in WWE was something they never saw before, and you can even say like Macho Man too, right? Macho Man was in a different territory, so you kind of had these territory wrestlers that they're all different territories, but it was within the NWA framework, so that was different from the WWE. And when these guys started coming in, it was fresh and it was styles that you never saw before. Because when you're 6, 7 years old, 8 years old, and you're watching Hulk Hogan, and there's a Hulk Hogan match, yeah, you're like blown away just because it's Hulk Hogan. But then, when we started getting older, we started gravitating towards the Ricky the Dragon Steamboats, toward Rick Rude, towards Mr. Perfect, to Macho Man, you know, at the pinnacle of everything. So You're starting to have these guys where you're getting these territory based wrestlers. There's a main framework of NWA. Now they're in WWF, and when they clash, it's a different style. It's stuff you haven't seen before, and then you know these guys can work, right? And I think what you kind of had during the Attitude Era was kind of the same with like Edge and Christian, Jericho, Benoit, Eddie Guerrero. These are like the last remnants of the territory guys, and it was totally different companies. WCW wasn't their end-all sale. Like, they did a ton of work before they got to WCW. And when you put them in the WWE with the ladder matches and stuff, you're going like, wow. Like, these guys, I've never seen this before. And I think Daniel Bryan and CM Punk brought a little bit of that, too. CM Punk had a different match than everybody else in the WWE. It was a really good match. Daniel Bryan did when he first started out. So I think all these indie guys, I think it's the next wave. And Shinsuke, I think he's the pinnacle of that. I mean, I think he is out of all these guys that you've mentioned, Nakamura is the best wrestler in the world right now. I mean, he is, and not because he's my favorite wrestler, but pound for pound, he is the best. And I'm very excited to watch him in NXT. I want to see him in NXT for about a year, and then I want him to go to the main roster. But I think realistically, maybe it's 4 or 5 months, because this guy's ready to go, and this guy would do a ton of business. I mean, he would have like the Ichiro effect for MLB baseball, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Ichiro was huge, and you know, when he was playing for baseball,
he was huge in Japan.
Well, not only was he huge in Japan, but with his rookie year, it really brought over a lot of Japanese fans, and people, you know, and the Japanese would watch an Ichiro game. So, and he was doing something that nobody else was doing at that time. And that's what you have with Shinsuke Nakamura, is that Nakamura has that crossover appeal, not only in Japan, but you put this guy to the American public, his facial expressions alone, the way he tells a story, not with wrestling, but with his mannerisms in the ring, there's nobody like him in a long time.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, you said 4 to 5 months on a time frame. I don't know. All I know is he needs to be on the main card at WrestleMania next year. So whatever it is that they need to do to have him, you know, whenever they need to bring him up, whether it be as late as the Royal Rumble or something like that, and then but they need to figure out a plan that by next year, there's no way that guy shouldn't be on the WrestleMania card.
He could do it by himself. He could totally do it by himself with nobody else. I think he'd be fine. You put him with a guy like Paul Heyman, and that guy's going to take off. You have Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar together. I mean, you have Paul Heyman, Shinsuke Nakamura, and Brock Lesnar together, which I think would be better because, I mean, if you're trying to reach these mainstream people and you want to get your best wrestlers out there, you have a guy like Paul Heyman on the stick with him, and then you ride it out, and if he's there every flipping week and you bring Brock Lesnar every month, I think that's a perfect spot for him. That's the direction I would want him to go.
And there's your new Dangerous Alliance.
Not even so much the Dangerous Alliance. It's just you know, put him with the best talker. His personality is going to go through. He's something totally different from Brock Lesnar. He has more. Him with his broken English is a way better speaker than Brock Lesnar will ever be. So you know, so you multiply that with putting with Paul Heyman, and I think he's protected that way. And I think either way, it doesn't matter if he comes up by himself. I think he's better with Paul Heyman. I don't care about the Dangerous Alliance so much, but if you want the Dangerous Alliance, then Brock Lesnar, Nakamura, Dash and Dawson, you're set for the next year.
World of Pro Wrestling returns!
Alright, so movie scale number 143, hour and a half, just like at WrestleMania, went pretty fast. A lot of... you're on top of your game, dude. You know, I mean, we only got in a fight maybe 2-3 times, so that's good.
And those were all on you, so that's good.
All on me. All right. Yeah. Yes. Yes, Bobby. So, Musa number 143. Half a punch, half a clothesline, but it certainly did a job, Mary, as Danny Davis is on the floor.